What's up?
Hey, folks, Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crack-ups, and recoveries of some of today's most inspiring leaders and achievers. Here you get the stories of everyday people that overcame extraordinary challenges on the road to success, and along the way, stepped on to the path of greatness. People that sound like this.
JLD.
Jerry.
What's up, man?
What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
All right, this is where the magic happens. Are you ready?
Yeah, the volume just went up to like 11. You sound like one of the voices in my head.
Well, that's a good thing then. Hey folks, Jerry here. Welcome to an episode I'm titling A Voice in the Desert. Excuse my voice, I've come down with something. I'm not even quite sure what it is, but it's a plague of some sort. But I'm gonna go ahead and do the intro anyway. So, in this episode, I deep dive the story of one of South Africa's most popular psychics, Shannon Walbrin. Shannon's a transplant who grew up in Minnesota, but travel is a big part of her story, so I'll save that for the episode. In any case, Shannon's going to take us to the day everything changed when she heard a booming voice from above while attending a UN conference in the Sinai Desert. All right, folks, enjoy the ride. I had a lot of fun on this one, and I'll see you on the other side. Shannon Walbrin, welcome to QH Cube. I'm so happy you decided to join us today.
Thanks for having me, Jerry. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I think I'm going to learn things through telling you stories.
What do you see as your mission each day? So the best way I can set you up for that is imagine there's another you. It's a third person you, and they're hanging out with the you, right? And they're following you around each and every day. What would they say Shannon Walbrin does every day?
So I look like a totally ordinary human being on the outside.
I wouldn't say ordinary. You look pretty extraordinary.
Thank you. What I mean to say is I don't, you know, show my X-Men qualities externally. But if I were a third party looking at me, I would have supervision. And so I would be able to see that I actually have massive, big, white, sparkly angel wings. And I have a rainbow unicorn aura glowing around me with vortexes opening left, right, and center. And here I am going to the supermarket, blah, blah, blah. But actually, I'm straddling the world like a Mercury, like a Hermes, somebody who goes back and forth. How my me would see me, because she would obviously be sympathetic, is as a translator between the worlds. That's my role.
You know, I just finished up an interview with a shaman on the West Coast named John Rasmussen, and he said that his wake-up call, he heard that... before he knew what the heck he was going to be, he heard that he was a mediator between the worlds. And here I connect with another, I wouldn't call you a medium. You're more of a channel. Is that probably right? What would you?
You know, a medium specifically works with people who are deceased.
Right.
And so I really can't or don't do that.
Yeah.
And I am technically a spirit guide interpreter, but the general word for what I do is I'm a psychic. Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we get to bring it down to earth just a little bit. So the third person perspective is you looking at you, and she's saying, well, this lady's got a lot going on. There's vortexes opening. She's straddling two worlds, which means the way I hear it is you have an ability to hear what's going on the non-physical side as well as the physical side. If I was to dial up your mom today... what would she say you do every day?
She would lie.
She would lie.
She would say, she's a journalist. So because I was a journalist before, and I did radio, and I was a magazine journalist, and I was a writer, and I worked for nonprofit organizations for many, many years.
Okay.
And my parents have never quite been comfortable with the idea that I am this woo-woo person. So my mom probably isn't the right person to get an accurate description of what I do. But I am really a psychic, and I work with your team of spirit guides and angels. Mm-hmm. So you yourself, Jerry, you have a team of, you know, seven, and that person has a team of five, and that person has a team of three. And they're talking to you all the time. And they're not necessarily talking to you with words, but they're talking to you with sensations in your body, physical symptoms, possibly illnesses, and words and images and ideas and intuitions and hunches and tons of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I am their amplifier. I am their translator. So I am their interpreter to say to you loudly and clearly and in English, hey, you should go do that and not that. And you should do this and not this. Hmm.
When you crawl out of bed every morning, right, and you open your eyes, how do you look at each day? Like, how does it start for you?
With a lot of enthusiasm, actually, because I love what I do. Uh-huh. It's like being on a game show. So can you imagine being a contestant on a game show every day? Maybe that wouldn't be fun for you, but that would be really fun for me.
I could totally imagine that, by the way.
Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad. So I actually, when I was in high school, I was the captain of my quiz bowl team. Ah. And so they used to say, you know, when was the War of 1812 and things like that. And we would have to hit the buzzer and say the answer as fast as we could and as accurately as we could. And that's what my day is like, because as I get on the phone and as I Skype with clients, they're asking questions. They are treating me like Google. Mm-hmm. And I want to Google them the best answer possible that makes sense to them, that brings in details of their lives. Your car is making this funny noise and you need your brakes changed. The noise sounds like this, reet, reet, reet. And I want to freak them out. You know, I mean, I want them to say, yeah, that's right. I want to give them good information. And I also want them to feel that there's somebody living with them. That's not me, obviously, because I can't, mm-hmm. you know, bilocate.
I like that. So you're like a celestial Google machine. So
yes. Without the trademark.
What does that mean for you? So you get up every day and you have a sense of what you're doing. You know your role. You're clear on your role. But I'm thinking about the challenges that presents for you as a person. And that means, like, if you have your own ideas of the kind of outcomes that you want to create every day, and you're here in service, right, with this gift, how does that impact your day? Like, where do you set goals? Do you set outcomes? Does this bigger part of you that you've agreed to be in service to, is a celestial Google machine, does this take over a lot of times? Like, what does it look like for you?
Okay, so I'm a mom, mm-hmm. and I take my kid to school, and then I come back home, and then I work. And I work from 9 o'clock. I have a client at 9, 10, 11, 12, and 1. So I can have 5 clients a day, mm-hmm. and then I have to go back to school and get the kid. Mm-hmm. So for those 5 hours, I try to have 5 clients because I want to help that many people and I like to be busy. I like to be active. And I also have a coaching group that's on Facebook. And so I go in there and I answer their questions online. So those are my hours. And I ask my guides at the beginning of every day. So I'm following your question here. Mm-hmm. What's my priority for today? And I do muscle testing. You know, like kinesiology?
Yep.
So a kinesiologist would test you to see whether you're allergic to gluten or whether you're lactose intolerant. And she would take your hand and push it down. And if the muscle were weak, should Shannon eat bread? No.
Right.
You know, should Shannon eat milk? No. Can Shannon eat meat? Yes. Uh-huh. And the muscle would hold. So many years ago, from a kinesiologist, I learned that you can do that for yourself.
Right.
Anytime you want to. Uh-huh. And that was actually my entry point into my communication with my own guides.
Well, that's super interesting to me, because here you are tapping into this celestial information, and you're going back to your own internal guidance system too in that conversation. That's what I hear. Is that right?
I'm using my body as a pendulum. So I'm using my body as a dowsing rod.
Right.
Because I can feel it, and because I found it to be, for myself, incredibly accurate.
Here, I'm going to track. So here's how you see yourself showing up every day. Let's go to the bottom line answer. Celestial Google machine. You walk between two worlds, right? I asked you about how that impacts the way that you approach your days, because you see yourself in service to this greater ability. And I asked whether or not that service to the greater self creates some challenges for you in terms of your own personal goals and this and that. And I heard you say, well, I have to set some boundaries for myself, and I create some boundaries with time. And I set up a good structure. And I also have a way of determining through my own guidance system where I go with my days. And that's kinesiology. Am I tracking you right?
You've got it. And what I usually don't tell people, so that's the story that I usually tell people, but the things that I'm going to tell you are a little bit more. They're a little bit deeper. Well, I mean, people don't ask me these kinds of questions. You know, people don't take the next step and the next step, which is why I really wanted to do this interview with you. So I have those time boundaries when I'm working with clients and when I'm doing my work. And I ask my guides to help me organize my day so that it's super efficient. So should I make that phone call? Should I do this first? Should I post that post? You know, and then, wow, everything just falls into place so easily. But in the rest of my day, when I'm a mom and when I'm a person and when I'm going out and when I'm calling my friends, I'm also tapping into my guidance. Mm-hmm. And that's for me. That's my stuff.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like, I'm always on. Uh-huh. Sometimes I'm on for others.
Uh-huh.
Like Trevor Noah is funny on stage, right? And Trevor Noah is probably funny at home too.
Possibly.
I think he could be
grumpy.
He's one of South Africa. You know, I'm talking to you from South Africa. He's one of South Africa's best exports, right? So I'm Trevor. So, you know, I predicted that he was going to be on TV.
Does he know that?
No.
No, he should. No. Hopefully you'll hear the show.
Yeah.
This is a perfect way to segue, because you're talking about having to evolve as a person that has a skill set that's kind of rare, right? And you've had to develop ways of navigating life and navigating your relationships and boundaries, creating personal space for yourself and this conversation that you have with the universe. I'm imagining that's a big process to figure all that out. So let's go.
Do you think it's good for my relationships? It has not been. Do you think it's nice when I say to my now ex-husband, you know, my angels say that I should do this?
Right. So this is
not okay. Yeah, well.
Let me set this up.
I knew that you were going to ask that question because I'm psychic.
Of course.
But the point being is that intimately, I have an intimate and personal relationship with my guides that has nothing to do with my Google client work. And they're my guides.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm working with clients, they're their guides, and I have to be a translator.
Okay. So oftentimes, when a person steps into their superpower, we can call it, right? Your superpower we're dealing with is your psychic abilities, that there's often kind of a mucky muck behind that. There's kind of a mess or some sort of low point where all of this comes to a head that you have to figure out how to organize it, make use of it, so you can step forward and evolve as a person to be of service to the world. Did you find that there was a low point in your life where all of this stuff came to a head, where you really had to turn and look at these abilities and go, what do I do with all this? And what was going on in your life during that time? How old were you? All that kind of stuff.
So because we were just mentioning this, I'll say that one of the lower points was that I got divorced from the father of my child, and that's been very difficult. because we're still co-parenting.
Right.
But part of the conflict was he has his own guidance system. You know, everybody does. Everyone has their own guidance systems. And I have mine and he has his. And they were in direct conflict with each other. It was almost amazing how polar they were, how polar opposite in the way that we dealt with life and have different worldviews. So that breakup was really painful to me. And what I've been working on since then is, am I only my work? I'm sure artists and other really successful and creative people have that same problem. You know, am I only my work? And I'm not. I'm not only my work. But I'm not ever separated from that silver thread. You know, it's always there. And I'm truer to that silver thread than I am to any other living human being. And I don't think that that's really what a husband wants to hear.
So perhaps maybe you're more on the sensitive feeling side and you're connected in a relationship with a person that might not understand how you're approaching your life, you're navigating your life, and that becomes a challenge. Is that something that's been a challenge for you when this gift showed up, like throughout your life? Was that something that was, I heard you say already in the interview, my mom would lie, which tells me that this.
I love my mom. She might not lie, but I'm telling you that they've had quite a hard time accepting this.
Right.
This
so that's what I'm getting.
This career.
Maybe a history of like, we're learning about Shannon Walbrin and what it's like for you to evolve as a person with the gifts you have. And I hear, you know, one of the most painful for you was here you are in a marriage where you're devoted and you're committed to, and here's a person that doesn't get you, and I'm sure you want them to understand, but it leads to a divorce. So I'm taking you a little bit step backwards so we can learn more about what it's been like for you to step into this celestial Google machine role. What does it look like for you in your life? Maybe go back when these gifts started to show up. Were you finding that these abilities in your way of approaching life in the world was creating challenges in your relationship, maybe family, maybe even in school, or what? What does it look
like? I would have to say all throughout.
Yeah.
So when I was a little kid, I was highly sensitive, but with all of the senses, like what we would call today sensory processing disorder.
Right.
So lights were too bright and sweaters were too itchy and things were too cold and too hot. And I was sensitive and, you know, my dad would say to me, oh my God, you're so sensitive. But what we didn't know at that time was that's even the name of a job, to be a sensitive. And that's what I do now. I'm a sensitive. So being extra sensitive and crying a lot and overreacting and making a big deal out of things made me not very popular. And I would have like one friend at a time in school. And I was really intelligent. I was very, very academic. I was always at the top of my class, and I was advanced in my intellect, but I was behind in my social skills. So I was awkward and didn't know how to relate, and I didn't develop very quickly. So I was a couple of years behind, especially in high school. And all of that stuff, I always knew. I mean, I knew that I was gifted, but everyone said, oh, you're gifted academically. So I just went with that. Okay, I'm gifted academically. That's fine. But I had this strong, you know, I was raised Catholic, so I had this strong draw to the saints. And I started studying the saints from the time I was six. Like there was this nun and she gave me books about heroes. So I'm reading about Harriet Tubman. Thank God. You know, she gave me some good stuff. And Sacagawea and Joan of Arc. And I went, oh, She's my girl. You know, this is me. I'm Joan of Arc. So I went ahead and when we got confirmed when I was 13, I took the name Joan of Arc and that became like another aspect of my identity.
So you took on her superpower at that point a little bit.
I guess so. She I think was 15 or 16 when she got her gift, and I mean confirmation was 13. So I was slowly aligning with her.
Well, I want to make sure that we're all tracking you. And I hear this.
Okay.
You're super sensitive. You're getting this, you're seeing a reflection of that in the world, in your relationships, in your family. You're
your inner message, I'm interested in that. When you're super sensitive and everybody's looking at you and saying, you're so sensitive, and you're also carrying a message like, I'm academically gifted. From counseling people from a long period of time, I know that those two kind of messages can lead to major double binds for people and they can cause them to crash. But we're learning a little bit about your superpower already. You are at this age where you're getting some pretty powerful messages that could be conflicting messages, but somehow Shannon Walbrin's able to take those messages and go, I'm going to make use of that. And you find a way to step forward to use it to inspire you. You start to move towards inspiring literature. You start to take on the messages of some of these greats in the past. What was unique about Shannon Walbrin that she was able to do that at that time?
Well, it wasn't all so easy, right? I mean, I started to drink when I was 15 also. So the shadow was strong. The desire for success in the world's view of what success looks like, getting straight A's, getting into a good university, that was also a really heavy pressure for me. Having to pay for my college, you know, so I had to pay for it. I got some merit scholarships. I had to work also, so I was waitressing. It was a very conflicted time. It was a really heavy time. And I had dreams that came true. I had visions and I was journaling and I could see stuff that was then happening. So my clairvoyance was on, but it was really scary. I was repressing it at the same time.
What was one of those first dreams and where were you at in your life and what did you do with it?
I had a friend when I was 15 and he was 17 and he was also really geeky and he wasn't my boyfriend, but we were very good friends and he took his own life. And I knew he was going to do it. And about 2 weeks before, he had been depressed and he had gone into hospital and he had come out and he was feeling better. And his name's Matthew. And he talked to me about 2 weeks before he did it, before he committed suicide. And our conversation was like, I said to him, I know you're going to do it. And he said, yeah, someday. Yeah, I know it's going to happen, whatever. And then on the day that it happened, he wrote me a long letter. He gave me a record album. And he phoned me when I got home. He said, did you get the letter? Did you get the album? And I said, yeah. And he said, goodbye, Shannon Walbrin. And he hung up the phone and he killed himself. And I really knew. And I didn't know it at that phone call because I would have done something to intervene. I knew that he was on his way out. I knew that he wasn't meant for this world. It's something that has always stayed with me. And he still speaks to me, even though I'm not a medium, but occasionally he'll send me a message through music. Because he was a Beatles fanatic, and he did liner notes for all of the albums, and he did like lyric analysis, and you know, this is what this means, and this is a reference to this, and he gave me the White Album. And had done liner notes for it when he died. So it was a knowing. It wasn't a nighttime dream that I woke up from, but it was a knowing. And then I felt guilty. I felt really guilty about that. In fact, I don't think that I've told anybody that story, that I knew.
So you get a confirmation experience, and it's a confirmation experience that's a pretty dramatic one. How old were you at that time?
15.
So 15, I'm hearing you're at a place in your life where you're saying it's pretty heavy because you got some competing things going on. Here's this, it's a gift that's coming more into your awareness. There's also a very ambitious achiever in Shannon Walbrin that I'm hearing about that's competing for your attention in terms of succeeding in life. And you said, well, it was hard, so I started leaning on other things like drinking at that time. That's a major transition point that you led us into in the interview. Let's just take it from there. So you're 15, you're getting confirmation, and it's a bit of a struggle. Where did you go?
My brother passed away then, right then, when I was 18. And he died in his sleep suddenly, like what we would call sudden infant death syndrome.
How old?
He was just a year younger than me.
Oh, wow.
So I had just turned 18, and he was just about to turn 17. We were 13 months apart. And then that year, I left for university. And I grew up in the Twin Cities. I grew up in Minneapolis. And I went to university in Dallas, Texas. And that year, I had such vivid dreams of Patrick. Mm. And it was my processing of his death. And at the same time, things happened at university where I started to say things to people that were odd or inappropriate.
Like?
And weird stuff. Like, I came up to this girl and said, "You're afraid of the Oompa Loompa people from Willy Wonka." And she started screaming and ran.
Was it true?
Yeah. And we got a Ouija board. Somebody brought in a Ouija, the Catholic school, right? So somebody brought in a Ouija board and some people left the room. And I said, "Oh, I've heard about this, but I've never tried it. Let's try it. Let's see if it works." Got like 20 people in the room. It's a party. Mm-hmm. And so we're moving the little thing around, you know, and people are going, "Ah, it doesn't work. Ah, this is bullshit," whatever. And so then I say, if there's any spirit in the room, would you please give us a sign? And a light bulb exploded.
So here's Shannon Walbrin early in her evolution as a psychic. This stuff's starting to speed up. You have a transition point where it leads you deeper into your abilities a little bit. There's a bunch of deaths that happen around you. You go shooting into college. You're wide open. You're tapping into your gifts, and you're just, it's leaking out your ears, right? And you're freaking people out with it. And there's these experiences, these additional confirmation experiences, specifically around the supernatural. At that point, how are you seeing this, and how are you seeing yourself? Like, what are you telling yourself?
I just want to get married, have kids, and be normal. Oh, I just want to live a picket fence life.
Yeah.
I have to find a guy who will marry me so that I can get pregnant and I can have lots of kids. Mm-hmm. And then everything is going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. I'll move back to Minnesota and everything will be okay.
So your way of dealing with it at the time was you're being confronted with the reality of who you are, and your response is, "It's not happening." You're just putting yourself into the normal mainstream, right? There's a vision of it. There's a version of you that you're keeping nice, happy, and living the, you know, the traditional mainstream life. Okay.
So thank goodness that the university that I went to, which is called the University of Dallas, has a foreign exchange program where they take half their sophomore class and they send them to Rome, super Catholics, so that they could go meet the Pope, right?
Right.
So you go to Rome for a whole semester, but you have a Eurail pass, and you can go every weekend, and you can go as far away as you want to go. So travel became my new drug, and that's how I discovered who I was. So I started traveling maniacally. Like I started doing what they call in the 12-step programs, they call it a geographic. So I started going geographic and I started going all over the place. And then I said, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm never going to stop traveling because this is the only way that I can feel normal.
Because
I'm such a stranger. I'm such an alien. I'm a stranger in a strange land. So I might as well replicate that in the outside world by being a stranger in a strange land forever.
Well, I also hear that you're at this place in your life where you're creating space for who you're about to become, right? So as a traveler, as you begin to try to match what's going on the inside, you begin to match what's going on with the outside. You're expanding your space. You're creating the room for you to evolve into this bigger picture.
That's a very positive way to describe escapism and nomadism.
I mean, we could go there, but I honestly think that everything we do serves us in some way, whether we're healthy enough to see it or not. And at that point in your life, it sounds like, Shannon, you're not super comfortable with everything that's going on and you're looking for ways to cope. You're trying to cope. And this is the case for most people that end up achieving great things in their life. There's a period where life is damn uncomfortable. And for you as a psychic, trying to make sense of these two worlds that you're living in, one's just kind of coming into focus with the psychic abilities. But then there's this other world that you're supposed to live in. It was pretty uncomfortable for you. So you started to get a sense of some ease and grace when you travel a little bit.
Yes, I had my first external locution when I was living in Rome.
Clairvoyance, is that what, clairaudience?
It's bigger than that. Clairaudience is inside.
Oh, the big voice, yeah.
It's the big booming, it's James Earl Jones speaking.
Yeah.
So, and usually it's just a phrase. And so James Earl Jones talked to me when I was in Rome, and he said, teach. And so I wasn't an education major. I thought that was kind of lame. So I went and took some education classes. And that was such a gift because then I was able to move as an English teacher from country to country to country. And that's where we're going with the story. Because I started working for education for non-governmental organizations. They set me on the path to interview people as a case study writer and as a journalist. Then I got to interview people about, kind of like what you're doing now, their life-changing moments. I got inspired. But as I went from country to country, I started looking into their mystical traditions. So I ended up living in Brazil, and then there was Candomblé. And so I was learning about, you know, their voodoo system there. And then I moved to South Africa, and I found out about their Sangomas, who are their, you know, healers, witch doctors. And then the really big thing happened. So that's the punchline that I was going to get to.
Yeah.
When I was 33, I was on one of these NGO type conferences and I was in the Sinai Desert and I heard the big voice. I've only heard it twice in my life. And the big voice said, now it's time for you to help other people.
So the first one was teach. And the second one was, We're cranking up the amount of information that's coming a little bit more. Now you can go and you can start to serve people. And that's where likely you're starting to step into utilizing your gift. So moving into the shift from a struggle to a shift of, okay, now I'm in the channel of ease and grace and things are happening, becoming a little easier, at least in terms of your gifts and connecting your talent. Do I got that right?
You're so right, because I was in service for all of my 20s, working as a teacher, working in NGOs, working as a writer. You know, I thought I was on the right path because I was doing good.
Right.
But I wasn't being the gifted super person that I could be.
Your superpower wasn't unleashed. Yep, right.
And then it happened.
Okay. So let's just track for the listener. Shannon Walburn grows up. There's kind of two conflicting things going on. There's the inner gift that's starting to show up in your life at an early age. You're super sensitive. You also got this ambitious side of you. You also have the resilience and the resourcefulness as a person not to fall apart with those two competing things going on. You step into college. You are riding the wave of some huge transitions in your life, a bunch of deaths, what leads you deeper into your gift, right? Which is spilling out your ears. So you're struggling at that point. You're looking for some sense of release. You create some freedom by starting to travel, right? You expand your space. You begin to evolve. The big voice comes in, right? Shannon Walburn's superpower steps in again. You didn't reach out to the mental health community and be like, oh my God, my wheels are falling off. Somehow you said, this is okay. And you had the inner awareness to be able to utilize that in a positive way. You stepped into teaching. Things are going well in your life. You're learning more about the mystical side of life by running into those people and actually having conversations. And then the voice comes in again. So now you're like, okay, I'm moving from the struggle and I'm starting to move into my gift. Did I track you all right?
Wow, you're really good at this.
Okay. So here you are at this step, at this stage in your life. You're around 33, you said?
Exactly.
33 years old, the big voice comes in, and now you're ready to unleash your gift. What's going on in your life? Who's in your life, and how does that happen?
Well, let's narrow it down to that 24 hours, which was a pretty interesting 24 hours. I'm there at this conference in the desert, that we're staying at a Bedouin camp, and all these people, young people, 20s and 30s, from different nonprofits and organizations all over the world are there. And I say, hey, I just got this revelation. Can I try answering your question and see if I can give you an answer? And my accuracy rate is like about 60%. And so I'm like, wow, this is really great. Hmm. And one guy says, you know, should I marry this girlfriend that I have? And I go, oh, I wish you'd marry me. Because you're so okay.
Did you say that out loud?
And, yeah, I'm saying it in my mind. I'm like, is it me? What about me? And they go, it's not you. And I said, and I go, okay. So I still had this real conventional, I must get married kind of thing on my mind. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, it's a woman who looks a lot like me. I know you're from another country. You're from, happens to be from South Africa. She's American. She's got blonde hair. She's also a journalist. You're going to meet her, and she's the right one. And he goes, yeah, whatever. So I attended their wedding, right? I mean, I then he met her, and then they got married. Now I know them. Like, as
she was a journalist, blonde hair, and the whole nine yards?
She worked for National Public Radio, and then she ended up moving over here. And yeah, it came true. That gave me enough confidence. Those yeses right there with those 35 people from Spain, people from Mexico, people from Brazil, it was enough for me. I went home, quit my job. I said, I'm opening up shop. I'm a psychic.
Wow. So what do you... Okay, we got to slow this down just a little bit. So you're on the fast train now. Like, you plug into your gift. You're getting immediate confirmation. Not just confirmation in your mind. It's not fuzzy logic. You're not connecting dots yourself. You're like dealing with people in life, real life, that are coming back and going, holy crap, how'd you do that? And you're seeing evidence of it unfolding. So you go from this place where you're teaching and kind of living in a state of exploring your gift and your curiosity to suddenly you're like, I'm hanging a shingle. How did you communicate this to the people in your life? Like, what are your family thinking? Who are you communicating this to? And what are they thinking about the changes?
Instant pariah, exile, out.
Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy that I was living with at the time, done, over, done, nothing.
Wow.
So then I was a hermit. Then I was instantly, you know, isolated and cut off. And then I hermitized myself as well. Uh-huh. I said, okay, I'm going to start seeing clients. And I'm going to do this as my work. This is my calling. I'm going to take out an advert in the newspaper. I took out an ad in the newspaper, psychic, called this number, you know, 1-800-PSYCHIC. But as it happened, because of my nonprofit connections and because I had been in that, the town I was living in was Cape Town, mm-hmm. Cape Town, South Africa. Mm-hmm. I had a few connections. Somebody got me on the radio. And I went and I was on the radio and I did calls. So people phoned in and said, you know, should I quit my job? And I said, yeah, because you're a carpenter, obviously. You've got all those tools in your garage. You're never using them. And he goes, oh, my God, how do you know that? Yes. All right, I'll do it. Fine, I'll be a carpenter. I've always wanted to be a carpenter. So as soon as I started getting on the radio, the trajectory was like straight up. Mm-hmm. So the year that that happened was 2003. By 2005, I was on national radio once a week, speaking to like 5 million people.
So I'm interested, here's more of your superpower showing up, because some people on a steep ride like that would come apart with the gravity of it, right? Like you're going into orbit and there's a lot of tug when you're going into orbit like that. How are you keeping it together during that time? Who are you relying on for support, or is it just you and you have a strong enough connection intuitively with your guides and that sort of thing? Was that enough, or did you find yourself having to do other things to keep it all together?
So I wish that I could say that it was a smooth journey, but you know that it wasn't. So ever since I was 15, alcohol was really a trouble for me, mm-hmm. and I was really a trouble for alcohol. Mm-hmm. So it would mess up my life, and I would leave it, and then I would be fine for a while, and then I would get back into it. Mm-hmm. So Vipassana meditation, the 10-day silent course, got me straight and sober when I was about 29. Mm. And that sobriety lasted for about a year. And then I went again, and it lasted for about a year, the year that I got my message. Mm-hmm. So you're right, the trajectory was steep. Mm-hmm. And that structure of being so extremely Buddhist mm-hmm. was enough to carry me forward. So I always need these extraordinarily rigid structures to hold me, mm-hmm. or else I get very, very loose, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm.
So maybe in all of those, when you're starting to really get in stride with your gifts, there's still the tugs of the challenges around what it looks like for you, because your structure of your life is changing, your roles are changing, there's still some ups and downs. And in those downs, maybe you leaned on some old patterns, but you finally got the integrity through meditation to really keep it together around those changes.
Ever since I started, things have really, really flowed for me. I mean, here in this environment, I'm really famous. Like, I get recognized on the street. Taxi drivers hear me speak to them, and they say, oh, you're the lady from the radio. So there's a lot of flow in my professional life, and I've been really, really happy because I claim it. I claim that this is what I do. I introduce myself as this. I am this. Uh-huh. And my family has come to accept it. You know, they know what I do. Mm-hmm. I brought my parents on radio with me when they came to visit over here.
Oh, neat.
And yeah, it was a great experience. Some lady called in and said, should I keep using this construction worker on my garage? And I said, yeah, the German guy, you should definitely keep him. He's really cool. And she said, he's not German. And I said, his name is Heinrich. And she said, yeah, he's Dutch.
So it's more about how you're approaching your life and your gift. It sounds like you're confirming it, you're claiming it now, you're standing in the power of that gift. And that's where...
Right. But the personal life has always been very, very rocky. Uh-huh. So the first relationship after I got my gift, done.
Yeah.
I was single for a long time. Mm-hmm. I dated. Every time I would get to the point of, they'd say, so what do you do? You know, sometimes I'd go, I'm a counselor. Like, you know, I help people. I do Reiki, you know, no.
Right, right.
It had to come out, and it would, you know.
So the ease and grace is more about your gift. It's not necessarily the challenge for you, sounds like, and it continues to be, is how do you find a person that has the bandwidth in the vision to really accept and understand your role.
Maybe there's a dating site. But what I want to get to is I'm a really good mom.
Yeah.
And my kid, I won't talk too much about him because his life is private, uh-huh. but he is very psychic.
Yeah.
And he and I have psychic communication with each other. He's yeah. school aged now.
Yeah.
So we can send messages to each other. We know when each other is in trouble. You know, we have jokes, psychic jokes. And that has been, it's a mother-child relationship, clearly, but that has been the most fruitful relationship of my life. So I'm so grateful for that.
So you have the role of mom, but also the role of psychic. Does that, what about your relationship? Because it sounds like community is a challenge for you, like tapping into the resource of a community in terms of support there. Do you
I have good girlfriends, but as soon as they ask a question and the relationship changes yeah. towards a slightly therapeutic one, yeah. the friendship is over. And that has happened dozens of times so that I no longer help yeah. friends,
yeah.
but then it's a little bit few and far between.
Does the celestial community help? And I know that's a non-physical community, right? So we're learning about what it's like to be a psychic. While you're getting information with that community, does that still present a challenge to you in terms of like creating the bond of comfort? Because it sounds like you utilize the information, but there's still the challenge of living as a human, right?
I'm not very lonely, actually. I really love my solitude.
Yeah.
I still love intellectual stimulation. I do have a good relationship with my brothers and sisters and mm-hmm. my mom and dad. And we talk, and you know, I go back and forth between South Africa and the United States. I have both bases now. We can travel back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 3 of lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find myself very lonely.
Huh. So you've just gotten very comfortable, sounds like.
I really love my own time and my own skin. I love myself. Uh-huh. I love what I do and how I am.
Uh-huh.
I don't usually chat in a social way mm-hmm. with my guides.
Mm-hmm.
We just have more of an information relationship, mm-hmm. like doctors or lawyers
or
professors or professionals. You know, we have a very mutual, professional and mutual respecting relationship.
Uh-huh. Well, I also hear that now you've gotten comfortable in the role that you're in. You've learned how to really step into a space of self-love because of that journey that you've been on. It's a long and challenging journey that you've been on, but perhaps that's, you're starting to communicate to, at least to my audience, what the gift looks like for you. That's ultimately one gift that everybody has to figure out, right? Self-love. And perhaps that's one of the gifts for people that have to figure out ways to step into the power of a psychic gift is you really have to be able to tap into your own ability to love yourself in that process. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time because of the challenge that people have in terms of their perspectives. So Shannon Walburn, we learned a lot about your superpower. We learned about what it's looked like for you to evolve through this process. My last question is, what do you got on the hot plate? What is your vision for yourself? Like, what's your mission from this point on? Are you excited about certain things in your life?
So yeah, I'm going global. You know, I have a book, I have a course, I have all these other things.
What's the name of the book?
Is called Guided.
Guided, okay.
And it's on Audible because I really like to speak.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'll put that in the show notes.
Sure. The course is on Daily Om, that platform.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's about how to use muscle testing to get your own answers.
Uh-huh.
Because really, Jerry, I want to work myself out of a job.
Right.
I want everybody to be able to access not only the self-love, which you uh-huh. referred to, but everyone should be able to access his or her own divine guidance on a minute-by-minute basis so that you don't have to feel alone or scared.
All right. Well, Shannon Walmren.
Jerry.
I want to thank you so much for joining us on QHQ. I hope you had a good time.
It was amazingly restorative, and I feel quite energized.
Well, great.
All right, folks, that's a wrap on the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like the show and you've yet to review it, please do so. Just helps put it in the hands of the right people. If you dig what's going on here at TUI Media, keep an eye on your feed. I got some breaking news here about new shows that I'm launching, as well as some amazing new guests and a brand makeover. If you want to go ahead and take a peek at what's going on at TUI Media, just visit TUIMedia.com. All right, folks, as always, wishing you grace to fill your sails. I'll see you next time.
Weird stuff. Like, I came up to this girl and said, "You're afraid of the Oompa Loompa people from Willy Wonka."